I've been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
K-Row. I've been there. K-Row.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome to another edition of the Hashtag Middle Edge Podcast. Today, Ben, Becky, and I are here with Representative Paul Kirtman from Pacific. Thank you for letting us use your office, Representative.
My pleasure.
Now, first off, I would like to thank our sponsors, Republic Services and the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. There's three topics in particular that I would like to hear the representative's thoughts on. The first is him. You are one of the more conservative members of the legislature, I would argue, and win.
A badge you wear proudly, I believe.
Yep.
And you had a bill this year, HB 170, which would allow those licensed by the Department of Ag to grow, harvest, and cultivate industrial hemp. Why did you sponsor this bill? What do you think it would do? Etc.
Well, first of all, I think that the proper role of government should only extend to protecting people's liberty, right? So here's the philosophical argument. You look in the Declaration of Independence. Governments were instituted to protect our life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, protect our property. So if you're not doing anything to hurt anybody else, maybe the government shouldn't be regulating you, okay? We have manufacturers in Missouri who use industrial hemp as a raw material in the manufacturing of their products, whether it's food products, paper products, textiles, building products. There's something out there called hemp creep where they're using the fibers in concrete, makes it much stronger. But the problem is our manufacturers have to buy it from other countries because it's illegal for our farmers to grow. So what we're doing right now under our current law, we're taking Missouri economic development dollars that should stay in our economy to foster and help our economy grow and prosper. We're sending those dollars to other countries to bring in this raw material that our farmers should be allowed to grow in the first place. So the Federal Farm Act of 2014 authorizes states to make it legal as long as it's done under pilot programs through the Department of Agriculture or Department of Education. My bill sets it up through the Department of Agriculture.
And Missouri is a good place to grow hemp, right? I mean, we're in the middle of the country. It makes economic sense, an agricultural sense, for us to do that here.
That's right. And the thing is we used to be one of the number one producers of industrial hemp up until it became illegal.
How long ago?
50, 60 years ago. And so
not my lifetime.
And there's still farmers right now. Like, now it's a nuisance weed. Because you're not allowed to have it. You can't do anything with it. So we have farmers that, like, it grows so fast. It's such a robust crop.
It's like throwing money away, right?
You're growing hemp,
and you have to throw it out.
That's right.
Now, the Declaration of Independence that you referenced, wasn't it signed by a few hemp farmers?
Yeah, and it was signed on paper made by hemp.
What they would think today if they knew what we were doing.
Yeah. Now, there's a few other marijuana-related bills, hemp-related bills out there in the legislature. SB 56 from Senator Holzman was heard today in a committee. Do you see that maybe in the future Missouri opens up the door to medical marijuana? Do you think that would be good for Missouri?
I think so. I think what we've done with CBD oil already demonstrates that there's a market, and so there's a demand, and we have people willing to meet that supply. And I don't think that we should be locking our doctors out of practicing medicine. So if there are byproducts, if there is from refining hemp or marijuana that we have a medical use for, I think that we ought to allow our doctors to prescribe it.
That makes sense. Now, something else I wanted to talk to you about, because I know you have a lot of feelings about it, is taxes. This week, there were a few stories saying that tax collection is down because there aren't as many corporate taxes being collected. But I happened to notice you have filed a bill that would establish the Corporate Welfare Elimination Act.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure.
I love the way we title bills. It's one of my favorite things. And you read, and sometimes it matches, and sometimes it doesn't. It's not exactly.
It's
what
a stretch.
Sometimes for a bill that you know might not go very far, you kind of got to get your message in the title.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what I did with the Corporate Welfare Elimination Act. So I have a problem with a lot of our tax credits. And I don't put all tax credits in the same category. I prioritize the ones that I don't like And the criteria for those are the ones that are fully transferable or sellable. Because what we've done is the state, through transferable tax credits, is we've created a brand new commodity. So we will write a bill for one business, one particular person. You know, we can tightly write a bill to do this that allows them to get a tax credit that is really just for them. Now, the reason people say, well, we need to make these transferable is that way other people have access to these tax credits. But the thing is the process to do that allows the person that bill was written for to actually just make a lot of money. So they'll take the tax credits. So they have I'm just using numbers to make this illustration easy. If you have a $50 million tax credit and a $20 million tax liability, you can scrub your tax credit against your tax liability, but you still have a lot of tax credits left over. Other people want their hands on these tax credits, so you can take them to a broker and sell them to other people. Now, you've just made a lot of money in order to help other people find some of these tax credits. And what's happened in the past, what's happened in other states, is the people that are making lots of money will hire lobbyists to come back and have brand new tax credit bills written just for them, or else they'll start writing campaign checks to make sure that, you know, they have good relationships with the people that are voting on these new tax credits. But the bottom line is this. What did it for me was when I heard a guy testify against some of these tax credit bills my freshman year. He said, you're writing bills for people so that way they don't have to pay taxes, but these people are my competitors, and my business does not meet the requirements of these tax credits. So what's happening, he said, is you all are about ready to pass a bill that requires me to pay taxes just so my competitor doesn't have to. And as soon as he said that, that kind of sealed the deal for me. I think that one thing that makes us a state that's not attractive to investors is when we have policy, economic development policy, that gives certain people competitive advantages over others. And so what we need to do is we need to just create a template to bring all these tax credits kind of into the same form, or make them more accessible and available to everybody, or just get rid of them and get rid of the corporate taxes altogether. Because, I mean, if you have no corporate taxes, you don't need a corporate tax credit.
So I always think it's interesting as a lobbyist when a legislator files a bill that the lobbyist stands to lose money on if it were to pass. So, and like there was a bill thinking about if you have public dollars, then you can't hire a lobbyist. And those lobbyists lobbied against the bill that would get them, that would not allow them to lobby. So I always just think it's interesting when you're going after folks that are here in the building anyway, not going after, but you know, focused on a group that would serve to lose money that are lobbying actively against it. Anyway, I just always find that interesting how that relationship plays out in the building.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure I follow exactly.
Does anybody?
I think so.
Oh, well, we can move on. Maybe we'll talk about it.
No, I just want to clarify something, Representative. So you don't have a problem with tax credits in general. It's just how Missouri is kind of picking winners and losers.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And when we use... of course, people listening can't see it, but you all can look at my wall right there. There's all the tax credits in the state, and these things go back years and years and years.
I expected that to be longer.
Well, it's on 4 pages, and we shrunk the font down as about as small as we could get it to get all those up there. But the thing is we do these programs, and they kind of take on a life of their own, and every year they seem to get bigger and bigger. And in an era of term limits, we don't have people here that were here in 2002. You know, that passed a $50 million tax credit, or we're here in even 2006, you know, when or 2007 when they passed a $40 million tax credit for a developer in St. Louis City. And then later on they come back and they ask for more, but that institutional knowledge is not here. But we have representatives who want to be responsive and they want to do something to help the economy. But ultimately what happens is we see kind of this mission creep in these tax credit programs, and the state auditor's office did an audit on our Department of Economic Development, and we found out that a lot of these tax credits are going to people that don't even qualify for the programs under our own policies. And so we've got a lot of work to do to rein in these tax credit programs and make sure that our tax policy environment, tax credit environment, is actually fair and equitable to all the citizens of Missouri.
Philosophically, I've always found it interesting how conservatives and Republicans in general kind of have this internal battle with themselves regarding tax credits all the time. Because on one hand, we're spending less of the people's money.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember in 2008, you know, I was kind of really in tune to a lot of the economic discussions during the presidential debate. And Ron Paul, you know, this was his position, because he would always vote to earmark up a bill, then vote against it. And when asked, you know, well, how come you're doing that when you're against doing it, you know, passing the the earmark legislation, he said, well, hey, look, ultimately it's just less money in the hands of the government to grow the size of government. And I totally agree with that. And Milton Friedman even said, you know, if these tax credits are part of the market, they're part of the market. You can get your hands on them. I don't blame anybody for wanting to use them when they're out there. I just think as policymakers, we just need to make sure that it's fair and equitable for all the citizens of our state.
Speaking of the auditor, that was the third bill I wanted to talk to you about. You have HB 169, and to quote the summary, it would require a committee in the House to review and issue reports on the audits of any state agency or department conducted by the state auditor's office. Now, if you, listener, have missed it, the auditor's been pretty aggressive about audits of state agencies, departments, etc. Tell us about this bill, what it would do, and why you filed it.
Sure. Well, I filed it because back in 2014, maybe 2015, we were having the discussion about whether or not we should put a gas tax on the ballot, and we ultimately did. The people voted it down. After the people voted it down, the Committee of Government Efficiency, which is the committee I chaired, and the Committee of Transportation, we got together, and we went over 10 years worth of audits with the Department of Transportation. We figured we need to hold the department accountable if our auditors have ever found any fraud, waste, abuse, anything like that. Well, I asked the commissioner, I said, has the legislature ever gone over any of these audits? He said, no. And it's not that we can't do it. It's not the legislature can't do it. It's just that we don't do it, because if you've been around this building, people that pay attention, they know that every year there's always an issue that springs up out of nowhere. We didn't anticipate it being an issue. We have just political issues that kind of derail the agenda temporarily, sometimes permanently. And so what we need is we need the legislature to go over all the audits whenever our state auditor audits a department or agency. This isn't to audit the auditor's audits. I heard somebody thinking that that's what we were doing.
I'm the confused one.
Yeah, we're not going at, this is not geared towards going after the auditor or anything like that. This is geared towards utilizing our state auditor and going over, sitting down with the department or agency that was audited and going through that audit with them. Because ultimately, the legislature, the House in particular, is the one that's supposed to hold the purse strings. The budget's supposed to originate with us. And we need to hold our departments and agencies accountable if our auditor ever finds that they've been doing anything wasteful or abusive.
Right, because what good are those reports
if
you do nothing? It's like, this is bad, okay, we know it's bad, move on.
That's exactly right.
So
it
sounds to me, this would be like a considerable amount of folks' time, right?
To go over these audits
and kind of craft policy. How would that work from your perspective?
Not necessarily. It could, or it might not. It just really depends. Certainly some of the audits over a department or agency, maybe the auditor doesn't find much. What we did when we went over 10 years worth of audits with MoDOT, and this was a committee, we went over 10 years worth of audits, and we did it in about 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And what we did was we just went through the summary page, and we went from the summary page, and if people had questions, then we had the full audit, we could go further. So we just want to make sure that we are dedicating some time to go over the audits. And that might be really in-depth, or it might not really require that we go that in-depth. There might not be anything there. The auditor might not have found anything, but certainly if the auditor has, it needs to be brought to the attention of the legislature, and we need to let the speaker know if we have any policy recommendations. And sometimes
that would be more heavy on the front end, and over time, as you fix these problems, they wouldn't come back year after year, right? In theory?
That's accountability. It's
supposed
to work
like
that when they realize.
That's a crazy word, accountability,
yeah.
Right?
Now, I'm seeing a theme here, especially with this one, last one, where you've kind of mentioned and crafted some policy proposals based on the lack of institutional knowledge in this building. Mm-hmm. And it seems like this HB 169, the auditor bill, would force legislators to look at what's going on instead of allocating money blindly.
Yeah, I understand the people's, and this is my position for a long time, I think term limits can be a really good thing, but one thing that I learned was an unintended consequence was the lack of institutional knowledge. And so my first couple of years here, people would file good bills to kind of rein in government, you know, fixing these problems. But sometimes freshman legislators, they don't know who to go to, even the people that have been here for 4 or 5 years, 8 years, if we can find somebody who's been here that long and has been paying attention. But ultimately what I heard a lot was, we can't do that, the department doesn't want us to do that. We can't file this bill because such and such bureaucrat doesn't think it's a good idea. But you know, the whole idea is that we come here to be the watchdog on behalf of our people. So we're supposed to be responsive to the people and not to bureaucracies and bureaucrats.
Now, we have 3 weeks left of session. Are you excited?
I'm excited that we have... I would be more excited if it was less than 3 weeks.
Well, I thought you were going to say more than 3 weeks. And I was like, I think you stand alone on that one.
No, I would...
Well, it might be more than 3 weeks.
I hope not.
It might be more than 3 weeks.
In these last weeks of regular session, what needs to get done? What should get done? What won't get done?
What needs to get done is the budget. There's no doubt about that. We just have one real constitutional duty, you know, and that's to fund a few constitutional issues like education, roads, things like that. That has to get done. That absolutely has to get done. I think that it would be incumbent on my party, the Republican Party, to make sure that this year we don't have any problems meeting that deadline. And I think we're going to. I think we'll be able to get it done. I know the Senate's been able to make some progress, more probably than anticipated, so that's a really good sign. There's a lot that's not going to get done, but other things that should get done are my bills. So I'll just leave it like that.
I love it.
Now, some personal conversation. You have one kid, but you have another on the way, right?
Yep, I have a little boy named Oliver, 17 months and 18 months, and we have a little girl due in October.
Now, have you chosen a name for the little girl yet?
Not yet. So
Becky and I were talking about starting a pool.
Okay.
Of names.
Yes.
All right.
And you had mentioned Ruth, and then we realized that's your wife's name.
Yeah.
So, that's good, right? I'm a good guesser then.
Yeah.
That's a good guesser.
I'm sure it was filed back in your Rolodex of knowledge, and you're like,
yeah,
that seems
back
like a fitting
there somewhere.
Name.
It seems important. Like, I should know this.
Say, you guys aren't going to be pushing for, I don't know, names like Rachel or
Rachel's
Becky.
A great name, especially if you have a second
name. Don't name her Becky.
Rebecca and Rachel were sisters in Genesis. Just side note.
Rebecca's different than Becky. I like Rebecca.
Yeah.
I'm going to start making everyone, from here on, everyone calls me Rebecca. Is that weird? Yes.
I think it's okay. Are you going to name your daughter either Rachel or Rebecca? They're both great.
We haven't scratched them off the list, so maybe.
Oh, I love that. That's such a politician's answer. It's on the table. We haven't said no.
I was really hoping for a of the fifth.
That's one way to do it. Now, as a recent parent, I am curious what your parenting advice is as someone as busy or busier than I am with
parenting
babies.
Advice?
Yes, I need some parenting advice.
I don't know if I'm the best one to give parenting advice because I have one 17-month-old, so this is the only child that I've actually been able to communicate with, it is a learning experience for me. I am 36 years old and I have an 18-month-old, and I'll tell you this though, I think there's a lot that I might have taken for granted if I would have had children at a much younger age, and so I'm certainly soaking in this entire experience and using every opportunity to learn myself. I think I've learned a lot about how to deal with people.
Are there any parallels between running the Conservative Caucus and raising kids? What are the parallels of managing?
No, there's not.
Not at
there's
all.
None. But there are parallels. I spent several years with the United States Marine Corps, and there's parallels between that and raising kids.
Interesting.
No doubt about that.
Interesting. Are we moving on? Going to our five questions?
We got to move on to our five questions, which this week is going to be six questions, mostly because my husband just brought in a dozen of Hertz donuts. And so we're going to go ahead and wrap this up, listeners. First question. If you could only eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
One meal?
Yes, because, you know, I had to choose questions that you couldn't circle back to the Constitution.
Okay.
I would eat the Constitution.
He's like, well, I'd eat it on hip plates.
can I give this as an answer? It'd be a big meal.
Okay.
Yes. I like
I feel like
anything
I
specifically in that meal or just...
I'm a big fan of chicken.
Just chicken in general?
Chicken and mashed potatoes. I can do that every day.
Speaking to me now.
Chicken and mashed potatoes. Every day?
That's why I said big meal, because, like, certainly there'd be other stuff that I'd throw in.
Question. Can you switch up how the chicken is served?
I feel like I'm having a discussion with my stepson right now.
Yeah.
He always wants to change the rules, and it was a simple question.
It's not really that simple. It's really not, I mean...
Or maybe this is a guy thing.
You need to tighten up
maybe
that language and make it a little stricter so
we're gonna have to tighten it up.
Right?
Gonna get a Senate sub on that. If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
I would fly.
You'd fly.
Really?
Would you fly anywhere in particular?
In the house.
I probably not anywhere in particular, but I think that white is amazing. Like, if I could be like a, if I could go back in the Marine Corps and do one thing other than the infantry, which I absolutely love, the only other thing that I would even consider in the Marines is flying jets. I think that I'm just fascinated with flying.
Interesting. Speaking of jets, I got a press release this morning that apparently Governor Greitens has declared April, the last week of April, to be General Aviation Appreciation Month. I'm sure it does take off some wear and tear on our infrastructure at the very least. So that's a very conservative superpower for you to have. What is your favorite 90s jam?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for this. I just don't. I'm sorry.
'90s jam? I don't even know. Like, that seems so long ago. I couldn't even tell you what was '90s, what's '80s. Like, I'd be.
It's obviously Montel Williams. Not Montel Williams.
No.
What?
What's his name? The guy who sings "This Is How We Do It."
That's still not the right answer.
Isn't his first name Montel?
I don't know.
Yeah,
but
I take a hard pass on this question.
Okay,
no,
sorry.
The correct answer was Chumbawamba's Tough Thumping.
That's a good one too.
That's it.
That's a good one.
There we go.
I get knocked down, but I get up again.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Moving on.
What is your favorite Christmas movie?
Home Alone.
Christmas Story is mine.
Oh,
yeah?
That's a good one.
I still haven't finished that one.
Oh, it's
really
good. You haven't? Oh, that's my favorite.
I also haven't seen
Home Alone.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and it's like your fantasy, right? Like your parents are gone, you run the house.
And you're setting traps for burglars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is. It plays to every little kid's dream.
I like to take it a step further. My favorite Christmas movie is the entire Die Hard series.
Okay.
That's
Christmas
good.
Movies.
That's pretty good, actually.
When you were a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
When I was a child, oh man, I wanted to fly jets. Or when I was real little, I wanted to do something that would have me in the water, like scuba diving. I got to learn to scuba dive when I was an early teenager as a Christmas present, or as a birthday present. And then, so I wanted to, I didn't know what it was, marine biology, something like that. You know, I love the water.
Did you know that there's a place just south of you, actually, where you can go scuba diving in a cave?
Fontaine.
Yeah. It's
never
really,
done.
Really cool. Yeah. And it's like, it's a cave that, like,
I think
fell
that,
in.
That sounds
cool.
It's
a pretty famous
it's
dive
amazing.
Destination, actually.
And you can go on a boat tour, and there's, like, scuba divers underneath you, and it's, like, pitch black, so they have, like, different colored lights. It's really cool.
Scary.
It's cool. Last question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? No pressure.
Yeah, inquiring minds want to know.
Oh man, at risk of sounding very political, all I want in 5 years is I just want me and my family to be happy. So that could have me doing anything, but it's going to be geared towards just making sure that we're all together and good.
I think that's a great answer. I don't think that's a political answer.
Okay.
But and you can own a hemp field, right?
Oh man, I would love to own a hemp field. Yeah, that'd be great. Maybe in 5 years I'll
you're
exactly take the freedom
be great
to
farmland.
Own a hemp field.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, we thank you very much for your time, Representative, and of course, thank you very much to our sponsors, Republic Services and the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for listening. Drive safe, and we will talk to you next week.